Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Earlier this month, Charlotte Mecklenburg School Superintendent Dr. Crystal Hill unveiled her proposed budget for the next year. It calls for just over $660 million in Mecklenburg County spending. That's about $63.5 million more than last year's request. And Dr. Hill has made a point of saying that $35 million of that is for recurring costs like employee raises, adding staff for new schools, and covering rising costs. Interestingly, in listening sessions the school system held with parents, the predominant response was the imperative to attract the best teachers, and that takes money. Of course, there's more to the budget, so before the school board takes a final vote tomorrow night on what to present to the county commission, we'll spend the hour going through it with the superintendent, Dr. Crystal Hill, and the CMS chief financial officer, Kelly Klutz. Welcome to you both. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
And here to help me go through the intricacies of this proposed budget without tripping and falling, we invited WFAE education reporter Ann Doss Helms to join us as well. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning.
So, Dr. Hill, we're going to dig into the particulars of this budget through this hour, but talk to me first about the total budget for CMS from all sources, county, state, and wherever else you may get money. What is the total cost to run this system?
Yes, so our total cost is a little under $2.1 billion is our total operating budget.
And we're, what, the 16th largest school system in the country, is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. 16th largest school district in the country and the third largest employer in Mecklenburg County.
How does our CMS budget compare with Wake County schools, for instance?
It's similar. Kelly is here. She can talk specifically about the numbers. They are slightly larger than we are. However, you know, we have the intricacies are a little bit different. For example, we serve 30,000 multilingual learners, where Wake County has a lot less than that. So our funding is a little bit different based on the students that we serve.
So I know we've been going through a period of inflation here, so everything costs more, but you're coming to the county commission this year, ostensibly, to ask for more money than you did last year. That seems to be something that happens every single year. You ask for more than the previous year. Why?
Well, simply because, as you spoke to, things just cost more. For example, it will cost us $2.7 million more to run our operations with the rising cost of utilities without doing anything extra. So what it costs us this year compared to what it will cost us next year is $2.7 million. So everything is just increasing.
And Kelly, in negotiations, it's common to go to the negotiating table asking for more than you think you're going to get and asking for more than you know you're going to get. It's all part of the process. How would you describe this ask?
We are trying to be good partners and understand the fiscal constraints of our county. So we have done a lot of repurposing, reusing our funds within our current walls to ensure that we're using everything to the best of our ability before we make that ask.
And in fact, Dr. Hill, you described this budget request as reflecting your very, very basic needs and call it a very conservative request. What are the basic needs?
Yeah, of course. So the basic needs are keeping the lights on, like I spoke to a little bit earlier. The basic needs are making sure that we account for any state raises. We always want to make sure that our teachers are paid the very best. That's what the community has told us. The best way that we can impact that is through the teacher supplement. And then, of course, we have things that we're dealing with, such as cybersecurity costs that we need to make sure that we're taking care of. One thing that is different, Mike, this year in the way that we've presented our budget is we are including our capital needs as well. And so to my knowledge, that has not taken place formally when the superintendent made the recommendation to the Board of Education. Now, certainly it did happen in terms of mechanics, with the total operating budget that the board approved and then went on to the county, but it was never on public display. And one of the things that we learned from our partners and also the community is they wanted to have a better understanding of our capital needs, especially since we just successfully passed a $2.5 billion bond. So I thought it was really important to be transparent and show the full picture.
And if this were not a conservative request, how much more would you be asking for?
Well, that's really hard to quantify. What I will say is that through all of our community engagement sessions, we just calculated what the basic cost would be. For example, what we would need for, trying to think what's something that we pared down. We started off with large numbers of how much things would cost, I guess is what I should say. Then we looked within our existing walls to say, how can we create some efficiencies? What are some things that we can stop doing? What are some ways that we can recycle and refresh? A good example of that would be we had duplicative costs in terms of technology. You know, so if the state is providing a platform and we're paying additional costs for a different platform, why are we doing that? We need to stop paying for something if the state is already funding something else. So we did lots of exercises like that, trying to parse out our basic needs. And then we couldn't figure it out with our current operating budget, with state funding, with grants that were available to us. Then we went out with what we need our funding partners to support us with.
And you want to
And I would say here. One example of that might be the raises for hourly workers, right? That if you had unlimited money, if you were just going in and asking, I think a lot of people would have liked to have seen everybody bumped up dramatically immediately. And in fact, that was where I witnessed something that I seldom see or hear, which is they held their joint budget planning meeting and some commissioners actually got on to CMS for not asking for enough because they were talking about bringing people up from like, what, around $16 an hour to around a little over $18. And they were saying $20 is rock bottom bare minimum. So they are planning to phase that in over 3 years. And that's actually what led to a little bit of the confusion over how much this ask is, because they kind of carved off a chunk to get the bottom there a little quicker. But that's an example of you could ask for more.
Let's talk about that discrepancy, because the system has said they're asking for $35 million more, and you and your reporting, Ann, have said they're asking for $63.5 million more, and we've talked about that discrepancy on the news roundup, but for those who did not hear the explanation, why is your reporting different from what they are saying they're asking for?
So there is the $35 million in ongoing operating costs. And then there's an additional $12 million that they are describing as one-time costs. And I will say, I think one factor at play here is Sheila Shirley was the chief financial officer for CMS when I started covering this beat in 2002. So she and I have done budgets together for all of that time up until this year. And reporters approach this budget in kind of an unusual way. You either have the insiders who are really deep in the weeds and know all the lingo and know why we're calling this, or you have kind of the general public who just wants the big picture. Yes, we support teacher raises. Well, reporters want to give that big picture, but also have to make the numbers add up. And I was looking at their presentation, which happened on a Tuesday night with no advance information, and at the numbers there, and they didn't add up. And so I couldn't say it's just 35 because they say so. So it's 35 plus 12, which is a $47 million increase. And what Kelly explained, unfortunately, it was like 8 days after the meeting, but explained it clearly, is there is also some money in there, about $16.5 something million dollars, that is being pulled in from the surplus. I'm not sure that's, I'm using the right phrase, but it's money that has been sitting in essentially the CMS savings account that they're pulling out. So it is adding to the bottom line for the coming year, but it is not a request for new money.
So at the risk of my head exploding, Kelly, I'm going to ask you a little more about this. $35 million would go for recurring operating expenses, and if approved, would be baked into, these are your executive summary's words, would be baked into future budgets. So give me some examples of recurring operating expenses. How have they been handled in the past?
So yes, so recurring is the $35 million that we mentioned. And so as Dr. Hill also mentioned, was the utilities. So our utilities are going to go up in cost. It's going to cost us $2.7 million more dollars. So we're going to, utilities aren't going to go down next year. So we're going to need that every year. So that's a reoccurring ask. Same with state-driven salaries increases and benefits, as well as the teacher supplement. So those are just things that are going to, they're going to reoccur every year, and that's in our ask.
So this year's budget includes $13.8 million for hourly raises, which would take the bottom level of hourly pay from $15.60 to $17.25 an hour, and provide a one-time bonus to the lowest paid staff to get them to $20 an hour. Dr. Hill, how many people would that cover? And what jobs do these folks making, if they get the raise, $20 an hour, do? What kind of jobs do they perform?
It's about 1,500 of our employees, and the jobs primarily are folks that are in our school nutrition department. We have custodians, some of our clerical employees, our before and after school care employees, perhaps some transportation employees. And that is just for pay grades 1 through 3. One of the things that I think that we have, this year, that is our primary focus, to make sure that those employees that are making less than $20 an hour are brought up to $20 an hour for the coming school year. But what I want to make sure that we emphasize is that our compensation study, the implementation of it, is over 3 years. So it's the bottom line is getting folks up to $20 an hour, but it also includes over the course of 3 years, making sure that we're rewarding people for service credit for state in the north, a state of North Carolina, and making sure that we're building in compression so that people are able to advance as they're here in our district. So it's not just baseline $20 an hour, but that's what the first step is for this year.
And maybe I don't understand this, but Kelly, this is being described as a one-time request, but how can it be one time if those wages and those wage increases are going to be maintained?
Or well, we know that the state's going to give us a pay increase for our employees, but we don't know what that pay increase is going to be yet. So the biennium budget described a 3% pay increase, but more recent information, especially after the governor's budget was published, we know that that might be 4, it might be 4.5, it could be any number between there. So we want to get our employees up to $20 minimum an hour this year, but we're not sure what that number is going to look like next year, because you'll have 2 years of raises there. So we did not want to give the county a reoccurring number that they had to build in their budget, because it's going to be less next year.
You hope.
We hope.
But there will be a request to the county next year for the next phase of this, right? It's just the question is how much it is.
That is correct.
We haven't talked about money going to teacher raises, which we will do when we come back. And we'll also take a look at the impact of this on taxpayers, because there are some people who are saying that if we fully fund this budget, taxes will, property taxes in Mecklenburg County will have to go up. And that's on top of the city already saying that they're going to have to increase their taxes. And that has nothing to do with the schools. We're here with Dr. Crystal Hill and Kelly Klutz from Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools. Dr. Hill's the superintendent. Kelly is the chief financial officer. And Ann Doss Helms is our education reporter at WFAE News. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte. Using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Dr. Crystal Hill, who is the superintendent of Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools, along with the chief financial officer, Kelly Klutz, and Ann Doss Helms, our education reporter at WFAE News, to go through some of the highlights of the budget that they will be voting on at the school board tomorrow in terms of deciding what they're going to present to the county commission for the county's part of funding CMS. This plan includes $8 million in county money to buy take-home laptops and tablets for students for the coming school year. This is another one-time expense, at least that's how it is described. But is it really? Because these devices don't last forever. They have to be replaced. And have you found that the students are taking care of the laptops and tablets that they're already being given? And when they return them in at the end of the year, are they still in relatively good working order for the most part, Dr. Hill?
Yeah, so the $8 million that you reference, we have lifted that as a one-time ask. You are correct that you don't just buy computers one time. Base case scenario, we would be able to lease our devices, which would put us on a refresh. Right now, we're not in a really good spot with our refresh for technology right now. The other thing that I will say is the state is actually taking this up with the education committee with our legislature right now. So statewide, they're taking a look at what that is. So that's why we haven't at this time carved that out as a recurring cost, because we don't know what the state's going to do. But base case scenario, it would be a recurring cost through a lease refresh. In terms of how students are taking care of their devices, that's something that we've really tackled just even since I walked through the door as chief of staff in 2022. Our chief technology officer, Dr. Salmon Hosey, has worked with our school board to make sure that there is a fee that's assessed in terms of the technology when students have damages or lost devices. And so we have to work really closely with our schools to make sure that those things are collected. One thing that I will add is that through our process of recycle operational funds, we've identified employees. So every school will have a point person that's responsible for the management of our devices. This is an investment, and we need to make sure that we're able to take care of our investment.
Kelly, funding for CMS, it's the single largest item in the county budget. It accounts for 35% of the county's budget and is therefore a pretty big consideration when it comes to taxes and how they levy taxes. There are questions about whether funding you at the requested level that you're coming to the table with, at least at this point in time, because it may change tomorrow night, I suppose, would necessitate a county tax increase. If it did, would that make you nervous? Kelly. Unless you want to take it, Dr. Hill.
I'll take it. I'll take it. So a couple of things. I would say that Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools does not have the authority to levy taxes, of course. That's the responsibility of our county partners. The other thing that I would say is that we are the third largest employer in Mecklenburg County. So it shouldn't be a shocker with 20,000 employees and over 141,000 students that it costs $2.1 billion to operate. And so in terms of how that is paid for, I would just definitely say you get what you pay for. And I think what we all can agree on is that a really strong public education system is vital, not just for our county and our city, but for our state and our country.
But all of this is connected to various different things, and it's kind of an evil wheel that turns like a snowball getting bigger. Housing is already very expensive in Mecklenburg County and the surrounding area. Rising home prices, rising interest rates have made things very unaffordable. High property taxes would make it more so. Rents have been rising. You have been, Dr. Hill, very concerned about housing for teachers, many of whom would qualify for affordable or workforce housing. And that's in very short supply and difficult to find and maintain. So wouldn't the tax increase make it even more difficult?
Well, we need to think about the chicken or the egg. I think we are in a sad state in North Carolina that we would even say out loud that our teachers would qualify for affordable housing. And so
we know that the way that we need to address that is by paying teachers more. I've tried to address that in the budget that was fully funded last year when I asked for a request in teacher supplement, as well as this year. But the truth is, if we can do something about the base teacher salary in North Carolina, raising beginning teachers to no less than $55,000 to $60,000 a year, then perhaps I would not have to come to the county every year and ask for a supplement to pay for what should be the base standard of living for a teacher in North Carolina.
This may be a little off topic, but you have referred in the past to housing subsidy plans for teachers, presumably paid by private entities, not the taxpayers. What can you tell us about that plan and where it stands?
Well, we're taking a really close look on what we can do for teacher housing. So what I can tell you is that we have partnered with several rental communities here in the Mecklenburg County area that are providing reduced rent for some of our teachers. That's in place right now. We also have identified builders who have houses coming out of the ground right now that will be able to offer our teachers housing for a reduced cost. And that's through with the actual builder. The next step is taking a look at what we can do on a broader, grander scale to address teacher housing. And this isn't a new concept. There are places all over the state of North Carolina that have gone into partnerships with private equity, as well as with government entities, to make sure that affordable housing is available to our teachers.
So higher taxes, the possibility of higher taxes because of the money in this budget request is only one side of the equation. As Dr. Hill has pointed out several times, this is CMS is the third largest employer in Mecklenburg County, behind only Atrium and Wells Fargo, 20,000 employees. And if many of those employees, teachers, receive raises, bus drivers, cafeteria workers get raises, etc., wouldn't that increase in the tax base offset, and you may not be able to answer this question because you're in education and not a tax reporter, but wouldn't that offset some of that increase in taxes? They'd be putting more back into the system.
Yeah, and that's kind of, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Anne.
I think that's kind of the reverse way of looking at that same cycle that Dr. Hill referred to, that yes, increased taxes set people back, increased wages push people ahead. So yes, that is a good thing. And I think that's the real tension here, is that A, the school district, if it is highly functional and successful, is a driver of economic growth and industrial recruitment and things like that. If the employees are better paid, that's better for opportunity, that's better for overall living. And if property taxes go up, that tends to hit those same low-wage people who might be getting bumped from, you know, $17 or $16 to $20. But renters also pay property tax, even if they don't write out the check, they are paying it through their rent. So it's a difficult cycle to break. And as we all know, you know, Mecklenburg County, Charlotte has been dealing with that whole opportunity question as a real puzzler for many years now.
Dr. Hill, Ann sent me a note this morning about what's going on in Orange County, where they levy a special district tax of 19.8 cents for the Chapel Hill Carborough school system on top of the 83.53 cent tax rate for that county. They do evidently quite well on the teacher supplement, and I'm wondering how else that plays out with them, because I don't think we've ever talked about what goes on up there with that special tax rate for schools.
Yeah, so we have information that we've provided in terms of what that does for their teacher supplement, but of course it also increases the total that they're paying in terms of their per pupil expenditure. So specifically in Chapel Hill Carborough, they spend $16,000 per student, where we spend $11.7 for per pupil expenditure here. So the total per pupil expenditure is about $5,000 more there than it is here. So, of course, resources, you name it.
Is there a measurable difference in performance, in outcomes, student outcomes up there versus here, or and can you connect that to the additional dollars?
Well, Chapel Hill is always outperforming. In all of my districts, when I was in Mooresville graded, also in Cabarrus, everyone always looks to Chapel Hill because they do perform. And, you know, size also does make a big difference as well. I will add that Mooresville City, when I was there, they levy a city tax in Mooresville that's specifically for education that allows you to do more there as well.
Kelly, I know that in your meetings with the county, some of them thought you weren't asking for enough, particularly for teacher compensation. And there have been other discussions. We had county commissioners on this program last week. But according to Ann's reporting, the additional money that you're asking for will take all of the revenue growth the county is anticipating in the coming year and then some. What do you think that would, you're the money person here, what do you think that would mean for tax hikes or cuts in county services? I know you don't work for the county, but you must have a working knowledge of this. Kelly?
So it's our job to make our request and identify our needs. Having not done that, we would not have been, we would not be true to our students and our parents and the people that we serve. So I have to balance Charlotte Mecklenburg School's budget, and understandably, they have to balance theirs. I really can't speak to that.
Okay, the people who came to the meetings, you had several listening sessions about with parents and other stakeholders about what they would like to see in the budget, and maybe they were unaware that the request that you're coming up with would eat so much of the county's expanded revenues. But what you heard was that the public is on your side in terms of more funding. One of the key suggestions is that CMS should focus on retaining staff, which you can only do by being competitive in terms of salaries and benefits. So what was your reaction, Dr. Hill, to that response from parents that acquiring and retaining good teachers should be the goal of this budget?
Yeah, I think it was a resounding absolutely. That's correct, because we know the number one impact on student performance is a high quality teacher, along with a lot of other things. So making sure that we're creating the right conditions for our teachers to be successful, that's our job. And so making sure that we're increasing that supplement is absolutely important. And we know that it's not, I mean, when the community came out and spoke, they spoke about teachers, but it wasn't just teachers. They talked about all employees, because we know, again, this is a large organization. It takes more than just the classroom teacher to run the organization. So that's why we've attached of our total ask about $28 million that's focused on our people excellence pillar.
Attracting and retaining teachers has been a problem for a while, and it's not just a problem at CMS. It is a nationwide problem. Is it just money? Is that the crux of the problem, or is it something else?
Yeah, there, like I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of different factors. I read a book a couple of years ago that says the first thing that you have to start with, though, is compensation. Once you get to a point where you can kind of take that off the table, then you start digging into the other factors. But there's things like building a really strong culture, making sure that we have great resources for our teachers to be able to use, for students to be able to access.
But even if you raise the salary to what you believe it should be in the best of all possible worlds, you have these other factors. We are told that teachers feel underappreciated. They don't feel respected. They can't. Some of them feel that they can't do what they do best and what they've been trained to do because they're too busy teaching to the test. Parents don't apparently seem to be on the teacher's side like they were when I went to school, because if I got into trouble at school, my parents believed the teacher, not me. Some of them are afraid to say certain things or to teach certain things because of politics and what's going on at the state level. Of all those things, even if you add in money, how do you address those things to keep them in those positions?
Well, for several years, the state has had the North Carolina Teacher Working Conditions Survey, which I believe is an extremely valuable data point. We actually just received embargoed data. I believe it will be publicly available tomorrow. And overall, we are pleased in terms of what that teacher working conditions survey says in terms of progress. We're not where we need to be, but there's lots of different areas that we can help with, making sure that we're providing time for teachers. I talked a little bit about resources, our approach to discipline, and making sure that teachers feel supported in the classroom. Just making sure that they have the tools that they need to do what they're best at doing, and that's teaching, and trying to make sure that we protect them from a lot of other things that are happening.
And we're talking primarily about the budget here, so let's get back to the money and the dollars and cents. But more than 76% of your operating budget, as I understand it, goes to salaries and benefits. 53.33% for salaries, 22.91% for the benefits that accompany those salaries. The governor is urging the legislature to spend more money on public education. He's proposing an average teacher pay raise of 8.5%, which would put starting salaries at $47,500. He's also asking for money for retention bonuses. If that were to happen, and if you were to get the funding for teachers from the county at the level that you've requested, what would that mean for average teacher pay here?
Well, it would definitely increase. I believe that beginning teacher pay should be no less than $55,000. So I think what the governor has shared is definitely a step in the positive direction, but we wouldn't be where we need to be yet. So we've run calculations and we presented that information in our budget based on what we were expecting. And so obviously our teachers would be in a better place than what we were actually projecting. So we would be one step closer.
As you well know, the legislature voted this year to expand opportunity scholarships to anybody who wanted them. The demand exceeded the supply, and now in the short session, they're coming back, and they're going to be pushed, the General Assembly is going to be pushed to add $300 million so that more opportunity scholarships can be given out. If that money went to the public schools, would you have to go to the well at the county level and ask for so much?
Absolutely would not. That goes back to speaking, you know, what I talked about, making sure that we have a really strong base teacher salary at the state level. Mm-hmm.
I want to come back and talk more about opportunity scholarships and charter schools, because the money for charter schools comes from your budget, money that you could have had for your own purposes, but it has to go to them. And we'll talk about that and what the county commission is likely to do and what Raleigh is considering as well and more. Stay with us at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Dr. Crystal Hill is with us. She's the superintendent of Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools. Kelly Klutz is the CFO of that organization. And Ann Doss Helms is with us. She's the education reporter here at WFAE News. We're talking about the budget, which will go to a vote at the county commission tomorrow night in terms of what they will submit. We'll go to the school board tomorrow night in terms of what they will submit to the county commission next month. And before that, we're having this budget discussion. And I know you wanted to jump in here and talk a little bit about the extra $300 million that Tim Moore is suggesting in an election year go to opportunity scholarships, money that could have gone to public schools had they chosen to make that investment. Fill us in here, Ann.
Right. And a newsletter had gone out from Marianne Wolf, who's president of the Public School Forum of North Carolina. That's an intergovernmental association of people who are advocates for public schools. And she calculated that if they've got $300 million lying around, which they do, I mean, we have a large surplus. It is not impossible to find additional money. If they wanted to pull out another $300 million for public schools, that could provide an additional 4% raise for all of the state's teachers, principals, and other educators. So that, you know, I don't know that it would get to that $55,000 that Dr. Hill's been talking about, but that would be on top of, I think, the 3% that they are expecting for the coming year, they could do a lot more for teachers if they wanted to pull money for it.
The per pupil, and you said you shared me shared this information with me earlier today, and the per pupil share of the county money passed along to students who go to charter schools is expected to come to $94 million. That's up from $82 million, I think, that was approved in the current year's budget at Mecklenburg County. Dr. Hill, there has been this move to have more charter schools, the money for which comes from the traditional public schools budgets here and around the state, and this move to expand opportunity scholarships, all based, I think, on the idea that the public schools are failing us. But North Carolina has underfunded public schools. They haven't paid the money that the courts have ordered them to pay in the Leandro case, and that's been pending for 20 years. So is the problem, if the public schools are underperforming, is it because we're asking them to do too much that have nothing to do with education, or is it because they're being underfunded?
Both.
And if you were to fund them and continue to ask them to do all of the things that we're asking schools to do that really don't have a lot to do with education in some cases, would the situation improve? Would there be less of a feeling that perhaps the public schools are not doing a good job for our students?
I believe there would be, absolutely. You know, if we are funded at a level that is acceptable and we are tasked with doing what our primary purpose and function is, and that's to provide a high quality education, I absolutely believe that our performance would increase because we'd be able to focus on what we're designed to focus on.
So we had several members of the Mecklenburg County Commission on this program on Monday, and education and the budget that you're going to request, even though they don't have the budget that you're going to request quite yet, that was one of the things that we talked about. And I asked Commissioner Mark Jarrell for his reaction to what we know in the press to what you're going to be asking for, and here was his response.
Right now, we're going to wait for the manager's recommendation. I can tell you this, Mike, the community is serious about education. We believe that teacher retention is important, so we're aligned with the superintendent on that, I think, generally speaking. We know that there's an issue in Raleigh. We need more funding from the state level so that we can continue to get the produce the best outcomes for our residents and for our students. And so I want to hear the manager's recommendation. We'll have substantive discussions and ask the superintendent some tough questions, and we'll see where we land.
He mentioned County Manager Dina DiOrio. She has already said, if I'm not mistaken, that the approach you're taking in this budget request is, quote, not all that alarming. How confident, Kelly, are you that CMS can make their case before the county commission to get what you'd like to see out of them?
We're very confident, as Dr. Hill described before. These are the essential items that are needed to continue our success. And we have worked on our partnership with the county, and we feel like that we have come a long way, and we're supporting each other, and we're all supporting the citizens and parents and students. So we feel good about it.
Mark Jarrell also said, Anne, that there's an issue in Raleigh getting more funding from the state in order to produce the best educational outcomes. From an objective point of view, has the state been underfunding? I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked Dr. Hill a second ago. Have they been underfunding public education in general? Do legislators understand the challenges faced by systems like CMS and other urban school districts? Or is their solution simply to provide alternatives to the traditional public schools, like charter schools and opportunity scholarships, because they have some sort of agenda that we don't know about?
Well, I think that we know about an agenda that we are hearing increasingly some Republicans talking about. I don't support the public school system. I support the parents and students. So there really is, I think, to an extent that I have not seen in 22 years covering this beat, from some people, an abandonment of the idea that the public school system is our equal opportunity. This is, you know, our community commitment. That doesn't mean that no Republicans value public education. I don't have the budgeting and higher math skills to say here's the ideal amount and here's not. But as we all know, there was a court case filed 35 years ago, the Leandro case that was all about adequate funding. Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools has the weird distinction of being both a plaintiff and a defendant in that case, which we won't get into, but they, several levels of the judiciary have ruled that they are underfunding. And there was a very deep, complex study about here's what it would take, and it's hundreds of millions of dollars additional per year. And the court said, okay, General Assembly, you must pay this up. And the Supreme Court initially sided with the people saying pay this up. And then there was an election and a Republican majority took over on the state Supreme Court. And now it's back before the state Supreme Court. So there is some objective information, and to the extent that anything's objective, there is some solid information out there saying they should be paying more. And in fact, what they're paying is legal fees to keep fighting.
I'm not a constitutional scholar, and I don't know the state constitution all that well, but I believe that the court decision in Leandro was based on the fact that the North Carolina Constitution requires adequate funding for public education. But could
public education.
So could the argument be made that if the money doesn't go to school systems, but the money goes to students to use as they please to get that education, that is public education? It's just a different way of thinking about it.
Yeah. So let me just jump in here. So I think that, you know, I don't want to get into, you know, us versus them. And at the end of the day, the children of North Carolina need to be educated. It doesn't matter if all of the expansion in the world goes to the vast majority of students in the state of North Carolina have been and will continue to be educated through a public school system. There are things that are provided to students that attend public schools that they do not get through charter and private schools. Again, the vast majority of students will be educated through public school. It is in everyone's best interest. Even if you are a parent that chooses to send your child to a private school, it is in your best interest to have an educated public. And the way that we do that structurally is through the public school systems in this great state of North Carolina. If we do not adequately fund public schools, we are going to pay later, and it will not be good for our state in the future.
So we have traditional public schools, and now we have these charter schools, which are technically public schools, even though they don't have to provide the same services and other things that the traditional public schools have to. But about 5% of the CMS budget, or about $4 million, is passed on to charter schools. You're just a pass-through. If the money stayed with CMS, would it make a noticeable difference?
Absolutely, it would. This year, in terms of our expansion request, we are taking a look at $4 million for charter school growth. And so the way that that funding works and the way that it flows is we actually have to use our manpower to process that. So we have to process all of the payment. It comes to us. It comes through as a pass-through. We have to manually. So all of the operational costs that it takes to even process the transaction, we're not paid. We don't receive funding for that.
To be clear, what she's saying is not that it's $4 million total that they will pass on. It's going to be, I think, in the area of $94 million with $4 million for growth. And I think Kelly told me that during this current year, they also added some requirements to fund virtual charter schools that added to that total that gets passed on. What the charter folks would point out, though, is that there are also, I think, about more than 27,000 Mecklenburg County students who are in charter schools. So if you abolished them, that would be 27,000 more students that CMS would also have to find ways to fund. So that's the pro-charter argument is, you know, we've got about, I think it's right now, about 16% of the Mecklenburg County students who are in public schools are in charter schools as opposed to district schools. If we do that percent of the students, why should we not get that percent of the local money?
That I just want to follow up on that, Anne, is I think it's also important to know that if the student resides in Mecklenburg County and attends a charter school in a different county, that funding follows them. So for example, a parent may choose to put their child in Cabarrus Charter because they work in Cabarrus County and don't want to go through whatever. So our funding is going to outside of the county potentially because the money follows the student. They don't have to stay within Mecklenburg County.
Right. And conversely, Mecklenburg County charter schools are getting quite a bit of money from surrounding districts for the same reason.
That is correct.
So I have to say, Dr. Hill, that I've had all of your predecessors on this program dating back 26 years. And you are the first superintendent of Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools who has ever said anything remotely negative about charter schools. All of the rest of them say, oh, we welcome the charter schools. We welcome the competition. Perhaps there's something that they can do that we will learn from and we'll be able to do it too. Has that ever happened? I mean, you're operating under a different set of rules on a different playing field. Have you been able to adopt some of the things that are working in charter schools and put them to work for you, or are you prohibited from doing that really when you get right down to it?
Well, what I will say is, again, charter schools have flexibilities that public schools do not. I think the attempt that the legislature has had tried to do with that is through the form of what's called restart schools. But the only way that a restart school qualifies for that is they have to be significantly low performing. And so to give a school that just opens just because flexibility, but then the only way that we in turn get that same flexibility is if we're not performing, seems like it's punitive. So you're almost getting a flexibility that this group gets, but the only way that I can get it is if we're not performing. And of course, we don't want to not perform. We are going to perform, which means that we're not going to get the flexibilities that this school may or may not get. And so the rules, you know, I don't want to portray that I'm anti-charter, but what I do want to say is that the rules of the game are that very, very, very different from licensure to what they have to provide, the way that, you know, the way that they're funded. There's just lots of flexibilities that we do not have.
So we have about 3 minutes left, and I do want to talk about the capital request in this budget. Some of the money, obviously, in this budget will pay teacher raises. Some goes for maintenance issues at schools over the coming years. This budget nearly doubles the request for capital projects from $22 million to almost $23 million last year to $42 million this year. Voters said yes in November to the largest bond issue the state has ever had. And all of that money, all $2.5 billion of it, goes to CMS. Wasn't some of that for repairs and capital costs?
Yeah, great question, Mike. So in Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools, we currently have 184 schools. And then, of course, we have other facilities like the one that I'm sitting in, our transportation hubs, things like that. And so the bond actually when we did our capital needs assessment, you know, our needs were great. And so when we were talking about the bond, I always said our needs are great. The bond is only addressing the top 30 projects, right? So it's only addressing those at the top. So we have replacements, we have, you know, things that are new builds, things like that, additions that will be captured there. This additional request for the capital needs does not include that group, but it does include everything below that list. And so in our conversations with the county, again, I'm just really proud of the partnership, not only with the county manager, but the county commissioners. One of the things that they asked for was more visibility into our total capital. They wanted to see the big picture. And so what we did is employed a company to do a facility needs assessment. And basically it's gonna cost us $57 million to address our capital needs of the projects that are below the bond. And so what this plan does is it breaks it out over 3 years. And so that's where we've come up with the additional $19 million.
I have 30 seconds left. And because of all these opportunity scholarships and the increasing number of charter schools, I would think that's going to take away some enrollment from public schools here and around the state. how do you know what capital improvements or additional schools you need if that number keeps changing? I have literally 30 seconds.
Because I know that our enrollment will increase with the wonderful things that are coming. So stay tuned for our strategic plan. We will be capturing a lot of students because endless possibilities start with Charlotte Mecklenburg.
Dr. Crystal Hill, touting Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools, as she should, as the superintendent. Kelly Klutz is the chief financial officer there, and Ann Doss Helms joined us for the hour. She's our education reporter here at WFAE News. Thank you all for the hour.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.